PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. We're going to mix it up this week, and I'm going to tell you to follow me on Instagram at Canadan82, and I'll get into why later on in the episode. With me is unofficially a regular on the show, my good friend, James Miles. Welcome, buddy, to the big show.
Back again.
We're going to mix it up for you, too, even though the name is the same. We can find James on Instagram at jman_THP. Are you like an Instagram guy? What's the play there?
I greatly prefer Instagram, man. To me, Instagram is one, I get to show off pretty pictures, which, as you know, I love taking pictures of golf clubs and other things. And two, there's way less drama.
There is no lacking the drama llama. Is there any truth to the rumor that Twitter's changing their logo from a bird to a drama llama?
They should. It'd be perfect.
You know, Twitter is its own interesting. I got about 100 words I probably shouldn't use on this one. But, you know, we definitely need to get into that a little bit later based on what we heard after the Solheim Cup. Obviously, some reactions there that were very curious. But I do want to kick the show off seeing what your game's like right now, because I haven't seen you in a little bit here.
That's good, actually. That's surprisingly, things have come together well. I've got another lesson scheduled here in about a week and a half. But even then, it's been a lot of work on trying to fix those things and kind of ingraining it with more and more reps and playing a lot of golf as I always do. And the scores have actually been really good. So it's been nice because early this summer was a struggle.
So let's translate that for the folks at home, since you're becoming a bit of a legend on the show and they want to know the success you're having. Is there truth to the rumor that my guy shot his personal best recently?
I did. I shot a 68. It was on a par 70. But still, that's our home course technically for the high school. And I think I have crapped away about 15 excellent rounds in the last three holes there because they're so squirrely. And I finally didn't crap one away and managed to pull away with a 68, which is, it's not my low ever, but it's my low on that course. And it's the lowest number I've ever posted, even though it's a par 70. So that was pretty dang exciting. Nobody here at home really cared because they don't care. But everybody else, I tried to brag to.
I mean, I care.
You did care.
The folks on the show care, absolutely. 68 is an incredible number, my friend. I want to congratulate you. And I believe you actually live posted the round for THP, which is super fun because I got to heckle a little bit in there.
Weird course.
Yeah, didn't you? Yeah, way too many trees, man. Way too many trees in the middle of fairway. We can talk about that if you want to later. But didn't you birdie a hole like late in the round? It wasn't like a get there and hang on kind of thing. Weren't you kind of going down the stretch?
Yeah, everything was actually grooving. I didn't play one of the last two holes. I did play conservative, but that's just because it's a drivable par four that I wanted no part in that day with what I was doing. But the previous hole was actually a tough one, and I went ahead and tried to fire at a pin, and it worked out. So that was kind of that moment in your head where you're like, well, it's either going to be really good or I'm just going to throw it all away right here. So the golf gods smiled.
So I had a pretty good round a couple weeks ago. Definitely my best in the year, not my PB, but we're talking about, I have to ask you a question because I know there's a couple guys out there, they might be listening to the show. Back a couple years ago, I'll never forget this. There's this idea that once someone gets rolling, you just shut up and let it happen. And I have a good friend, a THPer up in Canada. His forum name is Army Golf. Great guy. I think I got to like minus six or seven on the day way back like a couple years ago. And he goes, I'm just going to stop talking right now. It was great. My guys at the course, and they've been rooting me on all year. I've not put on much of a show. I got to a pretty low number, like right around the turn. I actually holed out on the 10th hole to really kick it off. And they weren't heckling, but on the 11th and 12th hole, they said enough to just rattle me, and I almost fell apart like right in the middle of the round. Is that kind of stuff true to form for you? Like if you're cruising and someone like really puts it in your face that you're playing well, will that mess with you?
It doesn't usually bother me, but I'm really, really cognizant of it whenever it's somebody else. I had one of my kids that graduated a couple years ago. We were playing in the summer round, and that was during his battle to finally break par. Cause you know, you got to do it, and then you have to do it again, and you got to prove it. And then, and then it becomes kind of, it becomes not, I won't say easy. That's not the right word for it, but it becomes less scary. And he was just cruising, and we were cutting it up the whole first about 12 holes. And then I got quiet, and he's like, "Coach, you got quiet." And he's like, "I'm not quiet. What are you talking about? I'm not quiet. I don't know what you're talking about." It's like, "Coach, I know what the score is." It's like, "What score? I'm not even looking at the score." So, and he about choked it off, but it worked out well. So I'm more aware of it with other people. When people do it to me, it's like, it's kind of whatever. Cause if I'm going to mess it up, I'm going to mess it up on my own. You don't even, whatever you do is inconsequential.
You know, I learned early on, especially playing with some of my dad's buddies, that you cannot take what they say with more than a grain of salt, and it might be too generous saying that. I remember playing with one of his buddies who will say whatever, whenever to support his own entertainment or success on the $5 bet going on in the day. And I said something to him. I was probably, you know, early young kid, probably like 20 at the time. And I had said something that just got him going at one point. And we were on the 18th hole. I was playing pretty good. And I think we were either up one or even. And the 18th at my course is no slouch either. There's water that runs along the left side. And at one point he goes, I hit this great just roping drive down the middle of the fairway. I might have had a wedge in my hand hitting into the green. And he looks at me, he goes, "Hey, Danny, don't you hit it in that in water." And when you know, I put it straight in the drink, the easiest wedge shot of my life, and I put it right in the water. And you know, I learned pretty early on that you just kind of have to roll the punches and not let the things get you. But I'll tell you what, man, I was like minus six after 10 holes, and it had been a long time since I got into that number, and the boys just started getting me going. And I could feel it, dude. Once you get going, and once you realize what you're doing, you can start to really feel it, like jittery a little bit, not like you know, freaking out or shaking or anything, but you get kind of jittery, like you had too much coffee or something like that. And yeah, it almost cost me. I had two incredible par saves, including a horrible drive in the 12th that probably had more turn than it did straight on it. But you know, it's one of those things. You hit two bad holes or two mediocre holes that you save par on, then you kind of get it back. And at that point, I was like, "All right, boys, give me a break. I'm trying to, you know, get a ball for the wall here." And it worked out. But yeah, back to you again. That's super exciting, man. And you have a set of irons that seem to be really performing for you right now. If memory serves, they're Titleist new irons.
Yes, the new T100S that we did the little release feature on and everything else. And I'm getting to spend some time with them. I my pick of the litter was the S, just based on our conversations with the Titleist guys and kind of what went into that with them being the stronger lofted ones. You know me, I've historically been a lower ball hitter, which isn't something I would really flock to, a lower loft, but based on the design, it works well. And I'm one of those freaks, man. I take a lot of crap for it, but you put the most forgiving iron in front of me and I'm probably going to hit it terrible. You put one of the smallest, more compact irons in front of me and all of a sudden I can hit golf shots. It's just, it's dumb, but there's a comfort level to it. And being real, these are the Titleist irons I've wanted to see from them in this category for a long, long time.
There's a bit of a conversation going on THP right now, talking about who like the basically most all-around companies in golf right now are. And I know we've had some really good experiences recently with Mizuno. Mm-hmm. They're sort of validating that. We always knew they made unbelievably good irons, but I think this year, and certainly there'll be more things coming from it, they have a much deeper driver lineup now, and great looking wedges as well. But then you start to look at Titleist. I mean, Titleist had, I would say, if anything, been struggling a little bit on the fairway woods and driver standpoint. And even from their end, it seems like a lot of these companies who are, I don't want to say doing bad. I think that's super unfair. I would say not leading the pack over the last few years have found a way to either catch up or surpass a lot of the big story products in that area this year. Do you think that's pretty fair, especially when it comes to groups like Mizuno and Titleist?
I do. And, you know, it's weird because we went through this phase in the industry where everybody was just trying. They were, it seems like they were trying to make everything fit everyone. Like, and I like to use Titleist as the primary example of this when we talk about these irons with the T100s, T100S, T200, and you know, the T300. They previously, the first version, they were smaller sizes and different sizes, but they all kind of looked the same, right? They were lots of badges, lots of chrome, lots of all these other things. And that's cool, but like there was no finite focus. And for them, you mentioned the Metalwoods. I remember a few years ago, like their big moniker was, yeah, but they're really straight, you know, but they knew there wasn't the ball speed there. Now the ball speed's there because they focused on it. The same things happen with irons. You've seen the same thing with Mizuno. They've refined the JPX line to be something that is Mizuno, not trying to fit everybody. Like it fits what they believe Mizuno irons are supposed to be. And you're starting to see it the same way in the drivers and the fairway woods. And I mean, the wedges and the new driver come probably the time this show airs. There may be a couple of articles on THP about those. So, well, the following week, really. But I mean, we can't say a lot about them, but it's the same thing. It's refinement and focus. And I feel like the whole industry, with the exception of a couple companies, has been on that train.
Are you willing to give me your top three right now?
Top three companies?
Yeah. From an all-encompassing product standpoint, top to bottom, with the exception of putters, because I know there's a couple of gaps there. That are being sort of closed, and I don't think that would fairly include all companies in it.
I don't have three, dude. I've got five.
I was going to say, you don't have to tell me like top. You can just say these are the three companies that are leading the pack for me.
I mean, I but like legitimately even thinking about that, because so many that are doing things differently, like I've got five. I mean, you can't ignore what Callaway does for throwing everything at it, like everything. Say what you will about supercomputers and stuff, like Callaway goes all in. Titleist has found their stride again, and Titleist looks like Titleist, but they're doing it with tech. I feel like Mizuno has really kind of let their crew do what they do too, and find that, I don't want to say Mizuno heritage, which but it kind of is. At the same time, they're pushing the boundaries of materials, and we're seeing stuff like that. But by the same token, I could say the same things about Cobra and trying to carve out their niche. Srixon is doing things differently. I mean, we could say Srixon Cleveland as a whole. Well, you just had a thing on some irons with their mainframe technology. It's the real deal. Like, and that's not me trying to come up with a cop-out answer, like some people are probably saying, well, they won't pick three, but like there are so many of these companies that are doing so many good things right now. Crap, Tour Edge. I sit here and my list gets bigger.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the fun part, right? Is that, you know, and Tour Edge is another example where they brought out the C721 driver this year, which you put in play. They also have a pro model that doesn't quite have the same level of traction, but we've had lots of guys touch and experience that C721 product and just be baffled at how good it is, especially from the price point they're pushing. And the nice thing, I like that you mentioned Cleveland Srixon, and I suppose we could pack Zexio into that grouping.
Absolutely.
Say that they have more of a product for everyone. It's almost like a company for every style of play. But Tour Edge, I mean, have their standard products. They also have exotics. They have that nice gap in between the two, whereas you have your more traditional concepts like Callaway, which have, you know, all their irons sort of packed into the same group, but intended for different audiences.
Isn't that interesting though? Like that thought in and of itself, like when we think about Callaway being like the more traditional in the concept of what their releases are, right? Like the cycles that they hit as far as which players things are addressed to, like they are kind of the ones that are almost becoming the high tech traditionalists of it all, whereas everybody else has is really, I don't want to say in their niche, but they are. Like they're in their lane and they've realized that we can do our lane really, really well and we can carve out something here. It's just crazy, man. And in these times, but I say it again and again, and people get tired of hearing me say it, but like nobody, for the most part, nobody's making bad equipment. They may be making bad marketing decisions, which we can get into something there if you want, but they're not making bad equipment, right?
Right. So, I mean, this is turning into a bit of an equipment episode, which I really like because, you know, it speaks to what your primary focus is as a golf writer, an equipment writer. Your goal every day is to analyze equipment and better understand how it can support players. And I like to think that I'm still pretty involved in doing that with some of the video we shoot for THP TV over on YouTube. Please go give us a like over there. Some love. Like he said, great Cleveland Launcher XL iron video just came out today where I get to poke fun at myself, which is super fun, but you know, cool content there. I want to go in a different direction before we go in the one you had mentioned.
Oh man, I threw up a softball too.
Yeah, I know. And we will get to Wilson's debacle, I suppose you could call it. But not unlike everyone else, we'll leave them to last since they don't seem to. That's not fair. I'm not doing that. I want to talk a little bit about ping and ping as it relates to PXG. This is going to be a weird angle and you're going to have to bear with me for a second, James, because I've been trying to bounce this around in my head. I know there's an idea out there that there was some sort of ping bleed over into the original PXG product line between the minds that created and the sort of styles that came out early on. Who would have thought that a couple years later, the pricing would be what would, you know, close the gap between the two companies. And what I'm talking about here is some very weird stuff going on. Crazy pricing on the new i59 irons at $2,000 for an 8-piece set, which I believe was supposed to replace iBlade and Blueprint, I guess. And iBlade was a great product. I know you enjoyed it. But $2,000, I mean, that's a heap of cash for an iron of that design when you have these other options that are available elsewhere. And that doesn't even get into the efficiency that's built into the product. It doesn't get into the tech at all. And I guess there's been some potential price adjustments going on, which I don't really know a ton of. Maybe you know a bit more than I do. Some like inline products, maybe possibly changing pricing, which super gross in my opinion. But meanwhile, PXG is actually bringing back to a more sensible number. And I think if you talk to 10 golfers about PXG, you'll have two opinions. The first opinion is I bought them and I love them. The second opinion is the pricing is stupid and I'll never play them. There never seems to be a wide gap between those two opinions, one or the other, with no one really dancing in the middle. But so far as we can see, they're actually bringing that price back to a more reasonable condition. And you sat with me during range days, which was a big video series we did, and put those irons up against the best in the business and realized there is very much a PXG iron set for me. I almost bought a set the other day, the 0311 P's, which were unbelievable, by the way. But you know, it was always pricing. It was price. As they bring it back, I'm setting this up as broad as I can because I really want your perspective in total. Where the hell is Ping going, and why does it feel like they're trying to be PXG of 2 years ago?
Man, the Ping thing, like, there's so many ways that this one hits for me because I like getting into this, the reviewing thing and everything else. I cut my teeth on Ping i20s for THP, and that's kind of what. Led me to end up being where I am and doing the things that I do. And I've always kind of have had an affinity for Ping. I mean, I have. I believed that they do what they do and they do it well, but all of a sudden it's become, I want to say, like we just talked about all these companies and how they've shifted. I mean, we've seen Titleist, who is the most traditional of traditional, about 4 or 5 years ago. You and I were at the PGA shows, like, and know what their booth looks like and everything, yeah, and all that's called with it and talked about it and everything else. But like, they have gone through a pretty dynamic shift. Mizuno, the same way. It's still traditional. They still have all the rules they follow, working with the Japanese and everything that goes with it. But they've kind of found their way to the modern era. Ping, however, is still clinging to this grassroots or death mentality where, like, they genuinely believe that Ping players are going to play Ping no matter what they do. I truly believe that. That no matter what they do, no matter what price they slap on something, if they tell the story, people will come. And we see it a lot. Like, Ping gets defended for a lot of things. Like, there's been some of it for this price raise, because the price raise is coming. It's happening. It is a real thing. They are going to raise the prices of inline clubs that have been out for months now. The defensive side of it for people is, well, COVID, manufacturing costs, and it's hard to get shafts and it's hard to get grips. And that's, to me, it's kind of a cop-out, because you're also raising the prices of clubs that you currently have sitting in stores that have been there for months, that have been on shelves. So don't feed me that story as your easy out to it all. If you're raising prices because you want to raise prices, come out and say, we're raising prices because this is where we feel like our product should be. I can buy that a lot better than I can you sitting there telling me something else, or worse yet, which was probably what's going to happen, not telling me anything at all.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think there's a nice parallel here before we really get into the rest of that conversation, is you had mentioned, you know, sort of justifying the price. And I think Callaway had to do that recently with their Epic Super Hybrid, which you have and have had some great experiences with already. You know, they went up, I think, $81 or $80 mm-hmm. in the pricing on theirs, but they also packed an absolute crap ton of technology into this head, adjusted the actual material that's being used. It sort of settles the mind when you think, well, like, why am I paying an extra $80? And they say, well, we added this, we added this, we added this, we changed this to this. It's like, yeah, okay, okay. Yep. And not to mention, I don't have to use a 3-wood anymore because they made me a 16 degree. By the way, guys, thank you so much for that. You didn't name it the Canadan Special, but I'm not mad at you. I just thank you. You know, at least there's a reason there. And it's not like they took original Super Hybrid and saying, hey, we've got a new one coming in 6 months, but you know what? These ones, they're going to go halfway up. So they're now 375 instead of 319. It's like, you know, how do you well, convince a group in an extremely competitive industry that your product is that superior that people should pay more than they did 2 weeks ago for it?
It blows my mind, because, like, even with the Callaway thing, like, there's some serious blowback on that. I gave them gruff on it. Like,
we were not polite.
You're gonna price a hybrid at $399.99, then it better hit itself. But by the same token, Callaway came out and they said, look, this is a niche product. We know it's for a small segment of golfers. We poured everything we have into this R&D wise. So this is what we're going to price it at. We know we're not going to sell tons and tons of them. We're going to sell enough of them, and you either want to play it and hit it or you don't. This is a standalone. It's a standalone product, right? I don't ever want to compare them to PXG, but it's kind of like that mentality of, hey, this is really good. Hit it, except with all the screaming yelling of Dr. Bob.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, yeah, the interesting thing that comes onto that, like, PXG is like, Ping has the potential with this new iron release, the I-59s. That's cool. You're using aluminum inside, which really blows my mind, if I'm going to be honest about it. It could be freaking fantastic. But when you price it at that, like, you're opening the door for a company who's been, let's be honest, been hemorrhaging in PXG, to where now if they come back, Ping has outpriced them. Yet we know, in terms of irons and stuff, PXG stuff's legit. Like, one of my kids' parents, I just pushed him towards a set of the Gen 4s. Like, he found a decent deal on them. I was like, dude, get them. Like, for your game, you're absolutely going to love them. They're fantastic irons.
And really, it only takes, what, 5 minutes of hunting on social media to find out whether or not pricing the way PXG did was going to be, you know, a positive mm-hmm. thing. Because they get raked over the coals pretty aggressively for it. No, you know, it's easy to do things on social media these days. Takes 5 minutes to find that out. Just like it takes 5 minutes to find out there is already an Off Course podcast, and it is mine, not golf.com's. Stop stealing my name.
The one and only.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's true. But like the ping thing, man, really, it's like it has broken my mind because I legitimately don't know what they're doing. Like, are you're either A, your head is stuck so far in the sand that you just don't care because you're gonna work on Karsten. So like you're just gonna work on that name and you're gonna live on it. I hate to break it to you, but young kids aren't playing ping right now. Like that generation is now playing. Honestly, you see more Callaway than you see anything else.
Callaway,
I still see a ton of TaylorMade in junior golf tournaments. Yeah. Those are the two that you're going to see everywhere. Yeah, you see some ping drivers, but most of the kids who play ping because their parents grew up in the era where ping was it. Now, what happens when that runs out?
Right.
And they're not preparing for it. Like I speak as a coach trying to buy bags from ping right now for my high school team because they make the best carry bags and it's turned into a nightmare.
Yeah, that's a weird part, man. Cause you have a super cool ping bag with flowers on it. And that doesn't really paint a good picture if you don't know what it looks like, but it's actually pretty sick. And I was joking around about wanting a new bag and I mean, ping kind of gets it done there. There's a couple of really cool features. They did an awesome one for St. Jude. Loved what they did with that. But then I sat back and I'm like, look, it's not that I hate ping. It's not that at all. I don't feel represented by it. I think there's a lot missing there for me. And you know, why would I buy a ping bag when nothing I play? And honestly, if I'm buying a set of irons, it's not going to be a $2,000 set of inline semi-competitive irons. Even if their baseline is competitive with others, I'll pick the others because of price.
But isn't that the most interesting thing to me about it? Like, think about the standing that ping has been in past years, and now what? Like, most of us in our age group and even younger relate more to Titleist, to Mizuno, to Callaway, to all these other ones. There's way more accessibility towards it all than there is with ping. And I just don't, and that's not to knock on the products because look, I'll sit here and tell you the driver may sound like a toaster on a stick, but it's a fantastic driver.
It doesn't when you hot melt it. I mean, you've been a ping guy for a long time.
The clubs are good, but
you know, it's no fault of your own. We sort of just deal with it, you know, when you talk about ping. No, I'm joking. You know, it's not like we're two guys just that you're trying to roast a company. It's not really that's not the case. If anything, and I've reviewed product for THP that is from ping and have been very positive with it. I think by design, it's one of the straightest drivers out there. Mm-hmm. ideally, your path is pretty critical there because if you're cutting inside, it's going to go pretty left, but you know, it's going to go straight. So that's cool. But you know, there's a lot of positive they can build on. I just don't see where they're building from. You don't see that sort of engagement. Now, obviously companies have taken it in different ways. Callaway's gone the Topgolf route. TaylorMade's gone a couple different routes. You know, it's fun to see the different avenues. I just don't feel like we've seen that from ping. It feels like they're very, very stuck in their ways.
I think they're dug in and they're just going to see what happens. And my fear is if you're going to sit there in today's climate and you're going to see what happens, you're going to get passed by, but we'll see. Well,
let's talk about another company. That's kind of seeing what happens. you thought you softballed me earlier. That was
man.
So if you're living under a rock, and by that, I mean, you don't live on Facebook marketplace groups or Twitter, you maybe didn't know that Wilson Golf unintentionally assigned a price to their latest CB irons. The intended price should be, I believe, $1,200, and they had it up for like $150, which is the price of a single iron. The internet, as it does, caught wind of that, and an innocent number of, hey, I'm going to give this a shot orders turned into something like 8,000 orders in what, like a, was it like a day and a half?
It was they like let a day, that sit up day, there? Day and a half. Yeah.
Unreal.
I think it was just over 24 hours.
So let's ignore the part where that shouldn't have lasted more than 10 minutes because obviously they're getting the data that they're getting a bunch of orders, which is probably unique for that style of iron from them. And we can touch on that if you want to. Ignoring that part, their responses have been a little bit lackluster, and the feedback that they're getting has been absolutely gross from a lot of different sources. Dude. I want your thoughts before we really dig into this.
Man, I like, you know, have you seen the screenshots of it all? Like,
no.
So there was like four different versions of the setup, and three of them were at full price, and one of them was at the 150. So these people that are like, well, they knew what this couldn't have been a mistake. Well, yeah, because the other, like, yes, everybody and their dog knew it was a mistake. Like, look, hey, I get throwing $150 at it and hoping maybe they'll ship out your irons to you. Like, but it turned into something really bad in terms of everything that social media has become has manifested on Wilson, and they're totally aloof to it all. I feel like, because on one side, like, your response, man, has got to be better than that. You've got to know when you sell 8,000 sets of something, you might have 1,000 sets of sitting in there.
Maybe. I think I'd be shocked if they had 1,000 sets, honestly. Maybe,
right?
Let's put some thought. I think people overestimate the sales on that style of iron, just lifetime. I think a lot of people, because let's talk about the reaction. So 8,000, let's assume 8,000 orders go through. That's 7,984 sets of irons that were purchased by people who didn't actually want the irons. And let's say 16 of them were looking at the irons online and said, man, I really want those. And finally, the price was right, so they bought them. Let's be generous and say it was like 0.1% were like that. Let's just pretend for a hot second that there's 8,000 iron sets sitting there waiting to be sent out for this unbelievably low price. First of all, 7,000 of those sets immediately go back up for sale. For more than $150, I'll tell you that much. Second of all, no one's ever going to buy a set of them from Wilson.com anymore because the aftermarket's absolutely flooded with them. Third, no one's going to sell them in stores if they even have them in stores because they can't compete with the quote-unquote aftermarket price of this product. Like, there's so many things that are foolishly flawed about the perspective that they should honor this price. I don't even have like a starting place for it. It's insane to think that they would ever agree to that. So let's get that out of the way. And I just want to ask you, do they have at this point an ability to recover from this in a sensible way that could look positive for the company?
Well, number one, in terms of data mining, you've now got a ton of email addresses. Like, yeah. that came up on the forum the other day, and I was like, man, that's brilliant. That's 8,000 new things they can spam. So that's,
well, maybe, unless one dude bought 1,000 sets.
For the overall outlook, I mean, like, I don't know. Give them a dozen balls. I don't know, but do you really need to? Here's my problem. Like, do you really need to reward that? Because that's part of the reason we are where we are right now. All of these people think they deserve something for having found an error. And if they don't take advantage of this error and they don't get something out of it, then screw that company, even though they were trying to literally screw that company.
Thank you. I've been trying to say this without being a total blankety blank about it, but you are let's circle back to the 0.01% of people who actually wanted Wilson irons and had heard of the iron prior to clicking purchase. Let's totally throw that part out and say those other 7,900 golfers, do they really deserve something for trying to take advantage of
an
obvious error on a website? Obvious. Like, it's not like it was 60%. It's not like it was $600 or $700. It was $150. You can't even grip your clubs for that price right now if you pay someone to do it. Like, there's no way that anyone can convince me they thought it was legit. You are 100% taking advantage. And hey, I get it. Shoot your shot. Let's see what sort of bad decision they make because it wouldn't be the first one they've made over the last couple years. But here's my challenge to you, sir. Now that they have this thing, do you send them balls? I say no. I say what you do is give them basically competitive pricing on anything they want on your website with limits of X and X. So, and I'm not talking about 40% off. I'm talking about like a clean 15 to 20% off. So they still get a piece. You still feel like you stole something from them, because let's be honest, that's what you're trying to do anyway. Even though it makes you sound bad, I'm sorry, shoot your shot. I get it. Why not give them an opportunity to get a price of on a product that they would not be able to get anywhere else? And if they don't want to buy something, well, that gives you an idea of how invested they were in your brand a week ago. Simple right? as that.
If 15 or 20% off makes you mad,
yeah,
then we know where you stand. Like, that's the thing that bothers me, man. And it came up on our community. It came up. He's like, well, they like, there's the comment that this is just terrible by them. They screwed up. They should honor this with people. And I'm like, what? How do you get to that? Like, I, 1 + 1 = 7. I don't understand. Like, yeah, it's just, it, but again, social media, dude, which I, it's an angry world out there, isn't it?
It's an interesting one. We're way deep in this episode to really get into what we talked about. We were going to about, you know, people being, I don't have words. I don't know who listens to this show and what age group I can function with. So I'm just going to say not nice people to our Solheim Cup losers, who frankly, everyone won that tournament. That was phenomenal. What excellent. A great showing. The most upsetting thing of the weekend was obviously Charlie Hall doing exceptional levels of damage to a T-box, which I got tagged in for some reason. I guess I'm a big proponent against that. So, and there's truth to that. But, you know, it sucks that you had such a cool event, and I'm kind of mad that I missed going to. It was sort of in my backyard. But, you know, shout out to Corda for coming out. But this is, we've had this conversation on the podcast before, but I've not done it with you. And I want to hear your perspective. Corda came out on Twitter and flat out said, you know, we see what you're saying and it sucks. You know, it's just not cool. I don't have the specific quote. I'm sure everyone who's listening to a golf podcast has already read it, because that's why, you know, you're in, connected with it. Mm-hmm. What was your take on her reaction there?
I wish we would see it more, because here's my stance on it. And it's always been my stance on it. And it's part of why it's funny whenever you led the show off with Instagram handles, because it's why I flock more to Instagram. Like, Twitter and that whole aspect of it all, it takes away any accountability for anything you say. You can call people the most vile things on the face of the planet and just sit there and laugh, and there's never any accountability, because when you go at celebrities or athletes or whatever else, half the time they're not going to see your comment. Like, if we're talking about LeBron or people like that, well, Kevin Durant's burner account will notice it, and maybe Patrick Reed's too.
Yeah, Canada N5738.
Patrick Reed's wife will notice it. But but for real, for the most part, with the exception of like some of these ladies that may not have the same traffic that others do, they're not going to see it. So now you've got somebody who sees it and calls you on it. And the fact that these people are out there saying these things, and some of them got upset by what she said, is what blows my mind, because now you're turning a blind eye to one side of it. And just because they're an athlete and they make millions or whatever they make, they don't have the ability to speak up for themselves. That's bull crap. Like, they're human beings too. Yes, yeah. You are on a stage and you have a different level of accountability. But the thing that made me the most angry about it is what they were going after her for, whenever it wasn't even her fault.
Yeah, that's heavy. Way to lay in there, James.
Hey, I've been waiting on that one, man. That's just, I just like, and whenever I was in the classroom teaching and stuff, man, it's what's made it hard. It's made it hard to teach at times, because in person they can't handle things like you can with anonymity. Anonymity is great, but it's also a slippery slope.
I don't know if it's great. I will say this, and I absolutely agree with you. Something needed to be said. And frankly, there's a lot of people right now that just need to be taken aback and, you know, smacked with a paddle a couple times. You're like, bro, stop it. Just don't do that. But, you know, it sucks in that our touring professionals, people with that kind of clout, can't spend their time focusing on the good and providing a positive experience for a fan who genuinely enjoys their content, you know, because it takes, and I've done this before. I've written out a tweet and then deleted it and then written it out and then deleted it and then written it out. I'm sure it was no different for her. I'm sure she sat there for 10 minutes thinking about it. In that 10 minutes, she could have responded to, you know, 10 really positive comments from 10 genuine fans and just absolutely made their day. And it sucks that things like Twitter are in a place where it feels like that needs to be said at this point for people to hear it. I'm coming around a little bit on that she said it, because originally I was like, man, just focus on the good.
Yeah.
I get it. I got trolled last week and I have like no clout whatsoever, so I can't imagine what it's like for them. But yeah, something needs to be said.
Well, yeah. And it's a shame too, because like she just played in a Solheim that was incredible.
Like, let's not forget like, what else she did recently for America. Like, good Lord.
But like for all the sessions, like I was constantly sending messages to my high school girls, like, you need to be watching this right now, because the golf was just so good. And the way that those women carry themselves and the way they go about it and the passion about it. And like, it was good. It was all good. Yes, America lost. That made me sad, but it was so good. And now she has to, on the come down from it all, deal with this, with people just attacking about something she didn't even cause. I don't know, man.
You know what needs to happen? Let Brooke play. Hashtag let Brooke play. I have one thing to ask about the women's, because I know we both enjoy watching their tour. It's spectacular golf when you really look deep into the kind of play they have. What's the one thing they can do to fix that tour? Like, straight out of the gate, tell me it's not slow play.
No, it is. It is. I think if with their skill levels and the way they hit the ball and the things that they can do, if they could speed up the game, it becomes infinitely more interesting to people. And I think you get tons more eyes, not because it's less viewing time, but you're getting to see more golf and you're getting to see more quality golf, more drama-free golf, if we're going to be honest. Like, that's the biggest thing from it all. And it's only going to get better in the next few years if they can figure that out, because there are some freak athletes coming to the LPGA.
So I agree with you. And it's fun to watch some of these ladies just absolutely tarnish the ball to the point where there was a time when we could relate to the distances they hit as everyday golfers, and forgetting the trolls on Twitter who are saying that's unfair to draw that comparison. It is unofficially getting unrealistic to make that comparison, because they absolutely hammer the ball out there now, which is super cool to see. And seeing the different ways they do it, seeing people like Takatanovic, or I think I butchered that name. I feel terrible. That's terrible. Super awesome. Love that name. But like, comparing her swing to Lexi as an example, who's like one of the original real bombers of the ball. And I'm blanking on a third name that I really shouldn't be. I feel terrible about it, which showcases how little I get to watch, which I also feel bad about. But I'm still trying to think of how to say her name. seeing the different ways they do it, I think is super cool, because it kind of goes back to, you're a big Arnie guy, I'm a big Arnie guy, swing your swing and do your thing there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but like, it's just they have a pace issue. The PGA does too, we know that, but the ladies, it just seems more exaggerated. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy in that, but if they could figure out something like that, because for the most part, their marketing and everything else that they're willing to do, it seems the right way. And I think that's only going to improve. So I'd love to see them gain a bigger audience. I really would.
Tava Tanakit, and I needed to look it up. Ann Van Dam is the other one I was trying to think of. She absolutely hammers the ball. And this is my favorite part of the show, because we skipped over the FedEx Cup playoffs, just like everyone else kind of sort of did. I watched mostly the Solheim Cup. I may have turned it over to see whether Rom could chip in on 18, but he did not. I just want to quickly say that I think comparing the values and the payouts lifetime to the results of the FedEx Cup playoffs is kind of ridiculous because $15 million for a four-day event is really, really, really stupid. Use your money better. $1 million is probably enough. That is my soapbox, and I don't care who knows it. I'm not going to let you respond to that because it's a stupid take. It's my take, but it does absolutely nothing for me watching East Lake. I think there's better storylines that could be created there. James, we're at the end of the show, my friend. Do you have any questions for me?
I do, but not about you. I want to know, after I've been out there and visited, I want to know what state Cal's golf game is in, because when I was out there, little dude was going to pound town.
Yes. So my son, who has, I think, gets asked to be discussed in the podcast more than I am, and especially my golf game.
I can't help it, man.
He bombs the ball. And actually, I don't think so. Sunday is my birthday. Make sure to, you know, give me a call on Sunday. But we are going to take him over to Topgolf in the morning, I think, and just let him rip cannons. I don't even think I'm going to take a swing because I'm playing in the afternoon. I'm going to eat a breakfast burrito there and watch him just rope the ball. He's got a better move at the top than I do. He doesn't overextend. And it was super fun having you in town to watch him rip balls in my front yard.
And he's just so matter of fact about it. Like, dude's like, okay, great. You want me to hit this? I'll hit this. And I'm like, man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Topgolf will be crazy cool.
Yeah. I'm excited because the last time he was there was he wasn't hitting clubs. So to get him there, just ripping balls and watching it go into the hole, hopefully.
I demand obviously video.
Much, much bigger hole. I'll shoot you some video.
Yes.
I'll try and get up some up on Instagram if anyone's actually interested in seeing it. Like I said, that's Canadan82 on Instagram.
Well, look at you going to the gram.
Yeah, I think I'm doubling down. And don't forget to give some love over at THP. If you guys are into great quality community content and feel, there is no other place like THP to talk about golf. We have an unbelievable homepage with writing that goes straight to the heart for these guys. They put a ton of work in. James has an incredible piece over there on putter fittings right now that's totally worth checking out. And then we also have club reviews. But we also have this huge community of golfers as a part of the forum over there. We're working on 8 million posts right now. Lifetime, which is an unbelievable total. If you are into that thing, if your wife's sick of listening to you talk about golf and you just need an outlet that's not super toxic like some places are getting, Twitter, check us out and make sure you say hi on there. You'll probably see James and I both say hello back to you. James, anything else from you today, my friend?
No, sir. Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll have you back on soon. Best of luck with your golf game as you close in on the cooler months. I know you don't slow down because you're a lunatic when it comes to that. And I'm actually seeing you next weekend. So maybe we might have to, you know, run this back, but live.
Yeah, I'm in.
All right, buddy. Hey, anybody out there playing golf this weekend? I know I will be. Have an awesome time. Make it count and swing your swing. There you go. See you next week, guys.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.